class. First, I break out the dance moves. Max began to dance the way she had during Charlie's prom. She'd snuck in with Dutch, and together they'd taken over the dance floor until the vice principal caught sight of the two students he continually referred to as my personal projects because I will not be broken, and forced them to leave. Then I watch everybody get liquored up. Then I start taking wallets. No. Oh, come on. I need the practice. Absolutely not. We're there to help our aunt because she's giving us a lot of money to do so. We are not ruining everything by going into dad behavior. We are there to prevent that sort of thing. Well, where is the fun in that? You can dance, though. And since I know you'll do it anyway, you can bring Dutch. Already called him. I think he's getting fitted for a tux right now. One of the tailors, a tough Serbian fox with no patience for what she called the idiocy of the badger, suddenly stood straight and yelled at Charlie, "I cannot work with this girl. She is crazy."
"I don't like to be touched," Stevie yelled from under a table. "Can't I just give you my size? I don't want your hands on my breast."
The fox flung her arms out in frustration, her cold blue gaze on Charlie. "How about," Max suggested, "we get that giant panda to touch your breasts."
"I wouldn't mind that."
Eyes wide, Charlie and Max looked at each other, then began laughing.
"He's very non-threatening," Stevie insisted.
"I cannot make these changes in time if I do not get help from you," the fox said, putting her arms across her chest.
Still getting measured, Charlie motioned to Max and watched in the mirror as her sister walked across the room and kicked the table away from Stevie.
"Out!" Max barked, grabbing Stevie by the arm and yanking her up. "Now, let the nice coyote—"
"I am fox.
Who cares? Fit you for these not as horrifying as I thought they would be dresses."
"These aren't bad for bridesmaid dresses, are they?" Charlie asked, studying the lines of the designer gown on her body.
"Remember the bridesmaid's gowns at Sheila's wedding?"
Max asked, dragging Stevie over to the wood riser and forcing her to stand on it.
"The giant bow?"
"Oh, God, the bow." Stevie slapped Max's arm away and growled,
"Just do it."
She stood ramrod straight.
"Just do it and get it over with."
"Like you're waiting for the firing squad," Max muttered, stepping away. The fox stepped close and, with another fox, quickly and silently began to measure a very unhappy Stevie. A knock at the door had Max twirling across the room, laughing when her skirt swirled around her legs. She opened the door and stepped out. A few seconds later, there were raised voices, and the door was flung back open. A woman who looked a little familiar stormed in, followed by Livy and Max.
"What are you doing with my brother?"
the woman demanded. There was silence, and Charlie realized that her baby sister didn't understand who this woman was yelling at. "Stevie, she's talking to you." Stevie's eyes opened, and she looked over her shoulder.
"Oh, hi, Livy."
"Hi, Stevie."
Stevie frowned down at the other woman.
"Are you mad at me or Max?"
The woman pointed at herself.
"I'm mad at you. I am mad at you."
"Oh, okay."
Charlie waited for her sister to say it. She wasn't disappointed.
"I don't know who you are, so I don't know why you'd be mad at me."
"What do you mean you don't know me? We've stayed in the same house together, traveled together."
"I'm sorry. Are you a fan? Do you want an autograph?"
Livy and Max looked at each other, but just as quickly turned away, and Charlie knew she couldn't catch Max's eye. It would be the undoing of her.
"You know me, Stevie. I'm Tony. Jean-Louis Parker."
"Are you related to Kyle?"
"I'm his big sister."
"The assistant?"
"Assistant?"
"Yeah. Kyle says his big sister is his assistant. You help with the mundane duties of his career."
Livy looked like she was about to say something, but instead she just walked out of the room. Not that Charlie blamed her. She would have done the same thing in her place.
"I am not Kyle's assistant," Tony responded. "I am his sister, and I want to know what you're doing with my brother."
"I want to know what you're accusing my sister of," Charlie cut in,
nodding at the fox now that they were done. She stepped off the riser and let them unzip and slip the dress off her. Charlie grabbed her T-shirt and pulled it on, then went for her jeans.
My brother says he's living with you guys. He's only 17.
Kyle's renting a room, Stevie said.
Tugging on her sneakers, Charlie hopped around so she could focus on her sister.
Since when?
Since this morning. He says it's impossible to work in the intolerable situation his parents have going at their rental house in Manhattan, and I totally understand that. Not everyone is like my sisters, respectful of what extraordinary people need to do to create. It sounds like Kyle's family is not like you guys at all.
Shaking, Tony's hands curled into fists, and she barked,
"I am not respectful of extraordinary people. I..." she bellowed.
Livy returned, sort of zooming into the room, grabbing the jackal's arm and pulling her toward the door.
"This isn't acceptable," she screamed as Livy dragged her away. "He's only a kid. He's only 17. If I find out anything weird is going on between you and my baby brother..."
"Done," the Serbian fox said, stepping back.
"Oh."
Stevie smiled at her image in the mirror.
"That wasn't so bad."
"Nothing is going on with you and that kid, right?" Charlie felt the need to ask.
"Nope. But now we're getting rent that will cover him and his security guard, which also means we actually have extra security. It's a win-win for us."
"Okay. Besides," she added, slipping out of her dress, "I love Kyle. But if I had to date that boy, I'd put a pillow over his head until he stopped moving. And that would be a great loss for art, don't you think?"
Charlie nodded and told her sister, "I love your sound logic.
It's just one of my many gifts."
Chapter 27
Deanne sat in Rick's office, Malone in the chair next to her. They didn't speak. Not because they were mad at each other. They just didn't have anything to say. That's one of the reasons Deanne tolerated Malone as well as she did. She didn't need to run her mouth. Rick walked in. "Sorry I'm late." He dropped into the chair behind his desk, taking a few seconds to bring something up on his computer. He turned the monitor around to face Deanne and Malone.
"These are the Wera twins. It turns out they're also part of the McKilligan family. They were, however, never in touch with their father, and they were raised by their full human mother only. They seem to have no idea they're honey badgers. But they have joined forces with one of the younger McKilligans, a Mary McKilligan who is known among her own in Scotland as the Beast of Bray Willow, the honey badger village most of the McKilligans come from. And if honey badgers are giving you a nickname like that..."
"Who do you want us to go after first?" Deanne asked.
"We think the twins and Mary are in the States right now together, but the twins are unbelievably wealthy. If they run, it'll be harder to track them down. But the Beast, considering the body count she had on her when she went into prison in Scotland, I'm sure it will be easier to find her once we've got the twins under control. Although I'm hoping she doesn't do as much damage here as she did in her homeland."
Rick looked at Malone.
"What's Katzenhaus's direction on this?"
"They're leaving it up to the group, since they don't really have an opinion on badgers. But if you want me to work with Deanne to eliminate this issue, my bosses won't care."
"Should we bring those McKilligan sisters into this?" Deanne asked.
"I'm surprised you asked, Deanne."
"Me too," Malone piped in. "And you were so nice about it."
"I'm just asking whether we should warn them."
"Excellent idea," Rick replied. "I'll take care of it. Now, anything you ladies need, please let me know. I want these twins dealt with. I know they don't know what they are, but it doesn't really matter when they've tried at least 3 times to kill or capture the McKilligan sisters. Sadly, they've already crossed a line they can't come back over."
After the fittings, all Charlie and her sisters wanted to do was go home. But in order to keep track of Carrie, who was off that evening with her bridesmaids and some friends for her bachelorette party, it was up to Charlie and Stevie to distract her.
Not hard, though, when all Charlie had to say to the bride was, "The gowns are long, so we can wear sneakers instead of heels, right?" Which led to a whole lot of hysterical yelling, while Max took Carrie's phone and set it up with a GPS app. Then she put GPS trackers into Carrie's multiple bags, which she carried with her everywhere. Once they'd done that and checked in with a weary Kenzie, they all headed back to the house in Queens. It was hot, so Charlie changed into jean shorts and a tank top before going outside. Entertaining the idea of treating Berg and his siblings with a little barbecue, Charlie went out the back kitchen door to see if a barbecue was one of the things that Tiny had in his hoarder house garage. But as she went toward the garage, she sensed something coming at her, flying at her. She only had time to turn her head as a fist slammed into her jaw, sending Charlie flipping into the middle of the yard. Her head stuck in the freezer, trying to find at least one more of those frozen honeycomb ice cream treats that Britta had turned her on to, Max didn't hear the yelling, but she heard and felt Stevie run by her. Stevie didn't run toward anything. She always ran away. But there was nothing behind her, and no bears in the house. Max closed the freezer door, and that's when she did hear the yelling. Charging outside, she came around the corner just as Stevie threw herself at the back of a female that Max recognized but couldn't believe was attacking her sister. Charlie was on the ground with five females over her, punching. Her sister hadn't gotten up yet, too busy trying to protect her face and side and, knowing Charlie, trying to figure out what was happening. But Max didn't need to know what was going on. She didn't care. Snarling, claws and fangs unleashing, Max crouched a bit, and feeling her anger soar through her, she moved. Berg and his siblings stepped out of the SUV. They'd been out on the island all day helping a company shore up their security. But despite all the work he'd done, his mind had been on Charlie. He couldn't stop thinking about her. Not just having sex with her, although he really wanted that. Soon. He just wanted to see her. Talk to her. See her smile. Hear her laugh. Watch her roll her eyes at something weird or funny her sister said. Deciding not to wait, he started down the driveway to go over to Charlie's house. But before he even reached the sidewalk, he watched a souped-up 73 Camaro tear down the street and slam to a stop, double-parking in front of the Badger's house. Dutch jumped out, tore around his car, and jumped over the fence. Not liking any of this, Berg continued walking toward Charlie's place. But he'd only gone a few steps when Dutch came running back out and waved at him. Berg took off running, yelling over his shoulder, "Doug! Britta!" He didn't wait to see if his siblings were coming. He knew they would. He heard the screaming and yelling before he even reached the front gate. He charged through and ran around the side of the house. That's when he saw it. A fight. A really nasty, violent fight. Not between military-trained killers and the McKilligan sisters, either, but a bunch of angry females and the McKilligan sisters. Even little Stevie was on the back of some redhead, screaming, small fingers trying to dig into the female's eyes. The weasel was trying his best to separate the women, but he didn't want to hurt anyone, so they were ignoring him. And the only rational person who could calm this out-of-control situation was down on the ground getting pummeled. Berg ran over and waded into the melee, trying to grab hold of one of the viciously fighting females. He didn't care which one. Dag was already next to him. He'd managed to get hold of Stevie. She was screaming and thrashing. Dag could barely hold on to her. Wondering how they would get a handle on all of this, Berg tried again to dig in and grab his Badger. But just as he caught hold of Charlie's arm, a massive roar startled him, and Dag jerked away. Britta stepped in, her shoulder hump raised high, and began swinging her arms. Much smaller females flew, tossed across the yard. Berg and Dag ducked. Once she got the women off Charlie, Britta bellowed, "That is enough!" That same bellow used to send Marines running for cover, made even generals find the closest exit. But these small women didn't seem to care. They started to come for Charlie again, but the weasel jumped between them and said, "No, Mia, no."
Stevie fought her way out of Dag's arms and launched herself at the one called Mia. And instead of stopping her, Max screamed, "Get her, Stevie! Get the bitch!" That's when all the yelling began. Each set of females screaming at the other. Except for Charlie. She was getting to her feet. Berg only noticed her because she was using his leg to help herself up. He grabbed her hands and pulled. Was all Berg managed before Charlie, bloody and snarling, pushed her way past Dag and Max. She yanked Stevie away from Mia, tossing her over her shoulder and into Berg's arms. "What the fuck was that?" Charlie demanded of Mia. "What the fuck do you think that was?" Mia abruptly grabbed Dutch, pulling him in close. Still clinging to his arm, she grabbed the weasel's face with her hand, squeezing his cheeks hard. "Look what you did to his face! Look what you did!" "He deserved it. He betrayed my family. Then you should have come to me. I don't have to ask your permission to kick the shit out of your idiot brother." Mia shoved Charlie. "Only I can call him an idiot." "Idiot." Shove. "Idiot." Shove. "Idiot." And that led to a punch. Berg started to step in again, but Britta held him and Dag back with a raised hand. Then she caught both women by their hair. They tried to swing on her, but it was a waste of effort. She was half a foot taller than Charlie and a whole foot taller than Mia. Britta simply held them off the ground by their hair and waited. Eventually, they stopped swinging, and when they relaxed, Britta dropped them both. "Are we going to be rational now?" Britta asked calmly, her grizzly hump gone. "That psychotic bitch," Mia yelled, but still sitting on the ground, rubbing her head, "attacked our baby brother." Dutch turned red, his gaze unwilling to meet Berg's or Dag's, because he was smart enough to know. They were grinning now. "How would you feel, Charlie," Mia asked, "if I attacked Max the way you attacked Dutch?" Charlie leaned forward and growled between clenched teeth, "I'd tell your parents I'm sorry for your loss." "Okay," Britta barked before the battle could begin again. "That's enough. We're done." The she-weasels began to argue that point with Britta, but she barely let them get started before she roared once more, sending birds from trees, Stevie back into the house now that her anger had subsided, and the weasels into silence. "I know you're pissed," Britta said calmly. "I'd be pissed. These are my brothers." She motioned to Berg and Dag, "and I'm very protective, so I get it. But it's over. Charlie kicked Dutch's ass. You kicked hers. We're done now." Like a group of dancers performing, the five she-weasels crossed their arms over their chests, hitched out their right legs, and let out annoyed sighs. It was weird. But their actions overall were not that surprising. Wolverine males didn't get along with each other at all, but they didn't mind having wolverine females around. So males with sisters, Berg had heard, often had their own little pack. They protected each other's territories and, when necessary, fought each other's battles. Although Berg didn't think Dutch had sent his sisters into this particular battle, he'd probably been hoping to avoid it. Too bad he hadn't been able to manage that. "So," Britta pushed, "are we all calm? Rational?" The she-weasels refused to answer, and Charlie wiped the blood from her lip before announcing, "I need to bake," and storming back into the house. They stood for several long seconds in silence until Tiny suddenly loped into the yard. Looking around, he finally asked,
"Did I hear something about Charlie baking?"
He pulled out a piece of paper from his back pocket.
"Because I've got a list here."
"You didn't make anything better," Dutch told his big sister while they stood by their cars. "You just made it worse."
"I don't care. The only one who gets to slap my brother around is me. Which reminds me."
Mia slapped Dutch in the back of the head.
"You're working for the group? Have you lost your mind? You could get killed."
"It's a good job. They respect my talents."
"What talents?"
"I have talents."
When his sisters just stared at him,
"I do."
Charlie slipped the cinnamon cake into the oven and informed Tiny, "I do not bake on demand. I bake when I want to."
She heard Berg and his siblings laugh. She faced them, and Berg quickly explained,
"Sorry, drug humor. Our mother would get it."
Not in the mood to analyze that, Charlie went back to the kitchen table and finished kneading bread dough so she could let it proof. Tiny held the list of neighbors' requests in front of her.
"But..."
Charlie pointed her flour-covered hands at the door. "Out."
"Fine."
Tiny slammed the list on the table and stomped his way across the kitchen, and Charlie again focused on her work. "You know," she complained to the three bears passing around a jar of fancy honey that Stevie had apparently ordered, "I had such plans for tonight. I was going to throw a little barbecue for you guys and my sisters. Relax. Maybe read a book. Just enjoy the evening, you know? But of course I couldn't just have a nice time to myself. Instead..."
"You're not going to blame your father for this, too, are you?"
Berg asked. Charlie's head snapped up, but he looked so damn adorable licking the back of the spoon and watching her, she didn't have the heart to rip off his big bare head. Taking a breath, she admitted, "If I could, I would. And I'm sure if I tried, I'd find a way. But I'll let it go for now."
"That's very big of you," he teased.
Dag was refusing to give up the honey, so Britta went to the cabinet over the refrigerator. She opened it, and Stevie, who'd gone inside there when the roaring started, handed her another jar. "This one is infused with lemon."
"Ooh, yum. Thanks, Stevie."
Britta closed the cabinet door and opened the honey. Dag tried to get a taste, but she moved across the room so she could eat in peace. "There's no reason we still can't have a little barbecue," Britta said. "Just the six of us." "I'm not sure I'm in the mood to cook right now." They silently watched her kneading the bread dough, and Charlie pointed out, "This is baking, not cooking."
"We'll barbecue,"
Dag said. "I'll get the supplies," Britta offered. Charlie used her foot to point out her backpack. "Take the Visa card that's in there," she told Britta. "It's okay. I'll pay." "No, I'm going to expense this as a..." She thought a moment. "Team meeting."
"Is that fair to your aunt?"
Berg asked. "My aunt reminded me today that the McKilligans don't really think of me, Stevie, and Max as family, so..."
"Yeah," Berg told his sister. "Use the aunt's card. Let's expense this bitch."
"Get some chicken!" Stevie yelled from inside the cabinet. Having retrieved the card, Britta asked, "Do you want to come with me, Stevie? Get out of the cabinet for a little while?"
Okay.
Stevie eased the door open and skittered out. It was weird because she crawled out of the cabinet and down the refrigerator to reach the floor without grabbing onto anything. Kind of like a spider. But the bears didn't say anything about it, and neither did Charlie. It was best not to talk about these things. It just freaked people out more. "Get stuff you'll eat, Stevie," Charlie reminded her sister.
"That's why I said get some chicken. Max will want cow. I want chicken."
"Just saying."
"Well, don't."
Charlie waited until Stevie was gone before she laughed. She's so sensitive sometimes.
"Can you bring over the grill?"
Berg asked his brother.
"Yeah, and some charcoal. I'll be right back."
Charlie put the bread dough in a pan and put the whole thing in the proofer drawer. That's when it hit her. This oven's new. She stepped back to get a good look. Like, super new. And expensive.
"Yeah. I saw the delivery guys earlier today after you all left. Tiny let them in."
"Why would he buy us a new oven when we're just renting the place?" Smirking, Berg held up the list of treats that Tiny had brought her. Charlie rolled her eyes. "Come on. Seriously?"
"Well, now you kinda gotta."
"Bears," she complained before snatching the list from Berg. Stevie was following behind Britta. As they neared Dutch's car, where his sisters were sitting on the trunk and leaning against the doors, the bear stopped and asked, "Still here?" Dutch stepped forward.
"My sisters want to apologize to..."
The rest of what Dutch was about to say was drowned out by his sisters emphatically denying that they were going to apologize to anyone. Britta roared again, but before Stevie could run back into the house, she caught Stevie by the back of the neck and lifted her up,
so that her feet kept going, but she didn't actually move anywhere. It was a little embarrassing.
"Now listen up, ladies," Britta announced. "I'm about to go out and get meat. Lots of meat. For a barbecue. And I could go ahead and pick up some elk, which I hear your kind enjoys. Or I can get just enough food for 3 bears and 3 honey badgers. Your decision. Choose wisely."
Stevie felt like flailing her way out of Britta's grip, but she was also enjoying the way the bear treated the wolverines. Not taking their shit, but still trying to make it better. Still holding Stevie, Britta started across the street, but Mia jumped from the trunk and asked, "Are you getting corn?"
"I can. And potatoes."
Britta smiled and said again, "Choose wisely." They reached the other side of the street, and Britta finally released her, so Stevie could get into the SUV. Once they were inside, Britta started the vehicle and immediately turned on the AC.
"I still make you nervous, Stevie?" she asked as she slid on her sunglasses.
"Everything makes me nervous."
Stevie thought a moment.
"Well, not everything, but man-eaters definitely make me nervous."
"But tigers are man-eaters, and you're half tiger."
Stevie stared out the front window for several seconds, ruminating on that bit of information before admitting,
"Dear God, I'm terrified of myself."
Chapter 28. Max didn't know when this had turned into a party. She'd been sitting on the metal picnic table, seething because she loved Dutch's sisters, but she wasn't about to let anyone go after Charlie or Stevie on her watch when Dag walked in carrying a giant barbecue grill. He was carrying it alone, like one might carry a small carton of apples. The only trouble he seemed to be having was that its dimensions made it a tad unwieldy. Without saying a word, he placed the grill down, walked away, returned with a bag of coal, lighter fluid, and a lighter. He didn't use them, though, just set them up and walked away. That was around the time random bears began wandering through their backyard. Peeking into the open window, heads moving as they sniffed the air. A few sized up the window as if they were wondering whether they would be able to rip it out of the wall so they could just get in there and devour the treats Charlie had started baking. She wondered if this was how full-blooded bears dealt with cars that had empty fast food containers in them. Did they look in, circle around, debate tearing the vehicle apart, before simply trying the door? One of the bears, a sow, of course, did that. She just walked in, and 3 seconds later came running out when a hissing Charlie charged her. Charlie slammed the screen door shut, and that was the last bear that actually attempted to enter their house without an invitation. Berg came into the backyard, giving Max a sweet smile before getting the grill going. He sure did seem happy. He'd spent only one night with Max's sister, but maybe that was all he needed to know how he felt about Charlie McKilligan. Wading into a weasel fight to protect a woman was a definite statement for any shifter male. Now he was getting ready to grill, like any middle-class American husband. It was adorable. Who knew that Charlie McKilligan would have an adorable relationship with anyone? Max's sister didn't really do adorable. Then again, she was a stand-up girl. She could have taken out any and all of those wolverines. She'd had a gun holstered to the back of her shorts. But she hadn't done it because she would never do anything like that to Dutch's sisters. Max wasn't sure that she could be as honorable as her sister. Not when a group of crazy broads were screaming at her and hitting. Eventually, those screaming broads came into the backyard. They barely looked at Max, which was good, because Max was eyeing them with great intensity. Honey badgers loved a good eyeing, as Max's mother called it. Wolverines, although as ballsy as badgers, didn't go out of their way to challenge anyone. They just moved along, hoping not to be noticed, so they could get what they wanted and then disappear. Not badgers. They'd go through your garbage with you standing right there, trying to shoo them away. Dutch sat down beside Max on the picnic table, and together they watched as Mia threw back her shoulders and entered the house. Depending on her attitude, the discussion could go any number of ways. but after about 5 minutes she came back out alone, holding a six-pack of beers. She took one and handed over the rest for her sisters to divvy up. If Charlie was giving out liquor, they'd made up. Big sisters understanding each other. Max pressed her shoulder against Dutch's arm, and he let out a relieved sigh.
"If there's a barbecue," Mia said after sipping her beer, "how about a little music?"
"Okay," Max replied. By choosing to speak to any of the She-Wolverines, Max was saying she was letting all of this go because Charlie had. Stevie might be a little more difficult to make up with, but Max doubted it. Their baby sister didn't really hold grudges the way Max and Charlie did. Although Max had been super impressed with how Stevie had thrown her skinny little ass into that fight. She'd always been a runner, their little sister. Which had been fine, because Charlie and Max had taught her to run since that day. That day they'd all had to run when Charlie's mother had screamed at them to do just that. That day when everything had changed, and the life they'd known had ended. That was what they'd taught Stevie to do, and she'd become really good at it. Sometimes running with so much screaming and roaring that their attackers were thrown off, allowing Max and Charlie to do maximum damage. But when Stevie had seen that Charlie was in trouble, she had done what both Max and Charlie would have done in the same instance. She went in swinging. Max couldn't be prouder. Eventually, Britta and Stevie returned with so much meat and corn and potatoes that another bear brought his own grill over, a much bigger one that the grizzly carried by himself. In short order, both grills were going strong, music was playing, and Max began to wonder if the neighbor bears would complain. They didn't seem to like too much noise. Stevie's panicked screams really upset them. But most were still lurking around the kitchen window, hoping for food. At one point, Charlie put a cherry pie on the window ledge. Two males got into a fight over it, allowing a sow to take it for her and her children. It was pretty funny. But as soon as a couple of black bears dived into the pool Max and her sisters had yet to use, it was officially a summer party. Berg turned the deer legs over, added some more seasoning, and covered the grill. He then moved to the second grill and dealt with the elk, then the third grill and dealt with the steaks, hamburgers, and hot dogs. Britta had already gone back to the shift-her-own grocery store for more meat and sides. Mrs. Fitzbayer was helping out by roasting the corn and potatoes, but she was doing it from her house. She didn't feel like having some hulking man-bear take my grill away. Charlie was still in the kitchen baking, getting everything on that list done. Tiny had already gotten his honey pineapple cake and had happily carried it home to hide away before coming back and invading the pool with a beer and a few of his friends. Then things got weird. Dag bumped Berg's arm to let him know that a lion male was walking into what Berg was considering a bear party that just happened to have badgers and wolverines. That was only a minor weirdness, though. Lion males were always attracted by food, and had no problem just wandering into your yard and taking some, because they were lion males and they thought they could get away with it. But the big weirdness was that when the lion male walked in, with several wolf females, also weird, he threw his arms open and Dutch ran into them. Dutch, a few inches shorter than the lion, jumped up into the feline's arms, wrapping himself around him like they were reuniting after the lion had gone off to war or something.
"I have nothing to say about that," Dag muttered. "Probably for the best. Don't like having cats here, though."
Berg shrugged.
"Who does?"
The weasel walked around the party with his lion and the lion's friends, showing them around, introducing them to some people, until they reached Berg and Dag.
"Berg and Dag Dunn, this is Mitch Shaw and his mate Sissy Mae Smith of the Smith Pack."
Berg's neck muscles tightened.
"You brought a Smith Pack wolf into bear territory, weasel. Sissy Mae is alpha female of the New York Smiths with her brother Bobby Ray. Thought it was a good idea for the McKilligans to get to know her in case they run into any trouble when they're in the city."
He winked at Berg, which Berg just found annoying, and took the she-wolf's hand.
"Will you and your pack mates be swimming today, Sissy Mae? The McKilligans have a lovely pool."
The she-wolves looked over at the pool filled with bears. No wolf with sense would get into a watering hole with bears. But despite that belief, Sissy Mae yelled out, "Woo-hoo! Let's get wet, ladies!" Extra small t-shirts and tiny denim shorts were dropped, revealing even tinier bikinis, and the she-wolves took off running, jumping into the pool without caring about the bears already in there. A few seconds later, stripped-down she-weasels in equally tiny bikinis followed the wolves, screaming and diving into the water.
"Isn't my girl amazing?"
the lion male asked.
"She can start a party at a gravesite." "Oh, wait, she did that once," he recalled. "It wasn't planned, of course, but no one really liked the deceased anyway, and we all had such a great time."
The lion smiled before asking,
"So, is that zebra I smell?"
Charlie was loving this oven, loving it like sunshine. She was able to make several of her best baked goods at the same time. She knew she was missing the party outside, but she was enjoying her time inside baking. With such a big crowd of shifters in the yard, she felt confident she didn't have to worry about any outsiders coming for her sisters or her, so she could bake without worry, without stress. She got through Tiny's list pretty quickly, since there were a lot of cakes and quick breads, nothing with yeast. While those baked, she worked on the more complicated breads, perfect to go with all the meats and sides grilling outside. It wasn't until she was taking the last batch of rolls out of the oven that she realized the music outside had increased, as had the sound of voices. Drying her freshly washed hands, Charlie went out the back door. It was as if she'd stepped into one of those desert raves, only it was in her backyard. She'd be worried about complaints if most of the neighborhood didn't seem to be in attendance. Charlie went looking for Stevie first and found her sitting on a low-hanging tree limb with Kyle, his giant panda protection not too far away, amiably chatting with local giant pandas from down the block. Stevie and Kyle were eating grilled meats and corn and people-watching. Stevie people-watching was a good thing. She seemed to get her best ideas doing that, either for science or music, and hanging around geniuses such as Kyle somehow grounded her. A kid like that, so full of himself, reminded Stevie that she needed to be more human sometimes, that her work affected actual human beings. It kept her from just creating to create without thinking about long-term consequences. Most scientists and artists were firm believers that to worry about those kinds of consequences stifled creativity, stifled their work and the greatness that could come out of it. And Charlie would agree, except where her sister was concerned, because Stevie's creations could not just destroy thousands or even millions. Without meaning to, she could destroy the planet. She had that kind of brain, that kind of genius. One of her early physics teachers affectionately called her the God Killer. He hadn't really been joking, either. So Charlie and Max kept an eye on their baby sister, one of them always on her, at least from a distance, just to make sure that she didn't do anything that they'd all end up regretting, seconds before the world imploded. Although, as Max pointed out, at least we won't have to feel bad about failing for long, you know, with the world ending and all. But right now, Charlie didn't have those worries, not with Stevie right in front of her, on a tree limb, laughing and chatting with Kyle, being part of the human experience and, it seemed, enjoying it. Charlie could relax, at least for a little while. Except she didn't really know what to do with it. Relaxing, that is. Not worrying, not plotting 20 different ways out of any possible situation that might come up. Although she did have 20 different ways off this street if it was necessary, but she'd come up with those contingencies the first hour after Berg had brought her here.
"Well, ha," a female voice said from beside her.
Charlie looked over at the tall, dark-haired woman smiling at her. She wore a minuscule bikini top and unzipped denim jean shorts over her bikini bottoms. She held a beer and had her wet hair gathered in a loose topknot.
"You must be Charlie McKilligan," she said with a
thick-as-molasses southern accent when Charlie silently stared at her.
"Must I?"
Charlie finally asked.
"I'm Sissy Mae Smith."
And she said it like,
Charlie was supposed to know her or something. But Charlie didn't know her. She'd never seen her before, so she said, "I don't know you."
"Of course, we've never met."
She suddenly leaned in and said, "But I am Sissy Mae Smith." Charlie leaned in, too, and said, "And I am Charlie McKilligan." The woman straightened up.
"I heard you're part wolf, raised by some pack in Wisconsin, I think."
"Yeah."
"So?
And you've never heard of the Smiths?" "I beat the shit out of a Smith recently. That was fun. And my grandfather told me not to date any Smiths. Of course, he also didn't want me to date any Green Bay Packers fans, which was weird, because he was born and raised in Wisconsin. He didn't want me to date any boxers, which seemed so random, and really didn't want me dating a cat person. So you'll have to forgive me if the don't date a Smith speech was lost among all that."
"Wait," the she-wolf sized Charlie up. "Which Smith did you beat up?"
I think Dutch called her Deanne. That was it, Deanne.
"You?" she asked, gawking at Charlie. "You beat up Deanne Smith? You?"
"Broke her arm," Charlie smirked. "Broke her friend Malone's face. Anyway," she shrugged, "hope you enjoy the party." Charlie left the she-wolf standing there, her mouth open, eyes wide and confused. Berg didn't know what to say when the lion male began the conga line, mostly because he never thought he'd see bears actually join a conga line. But there they were, bears conga-ing around Charlie's yard.
"Where's Charlie?" Britta asked.
He was proud that she wasn't on that conga line. Of course, she hadn't drunk that much. Sadly, Berg couldn't say that about his brother, who'd had a little too much tequila and was now dancing by as Berg and Britta watched. Pinching the bridge of his nose between thumb and forefinger, Berg asked Britta, "Could you?" She laughed.
"Look, I'll take care of stuff here with Max and Stevie. Why don't you find Charlie?"
"I just saw her."
Berg realized that Charlie was no longer where she'd been.
"Go,"
Britta pushed. She kissed her brother's cheek. "I'll make these bitchy weasels handle the cleanup. It's the least they can do."
"If you can do that, I'll get us out of Mom's Labor Day Grateful Dead celebration barbecue this year."
Britta held her hand out.
"Deal."
They shook on it, and Berg went off to find Charlie. He didn't have to look far, though. She was sitting on the trunk of one of the weasel cars. They really had a thing for 70s American muscle cars, drinking a beer and using her bare feet to pet his dog's back.
"Hey,"
he said when he was close enough not to yell. She smiled at him, and he loved how happy she seemed to see him. She didn't look at people that way very often.
"I've got a name for your dog. Benny."
"Benny?"
"He loves it. Licked my foot when I asked him."
"He's weird. He likes to lick feet."
"I thought about other names like Atlas or Titan, but that seems so typical for a big dog. So I went with Benny, which is much better than your non-existent name." He rested his ass on the car trunk beside Charlie, but even that little bit, he barely put any weight on it, had the car dropping down as if an anvil had been placed on it. Berg cringed, embarrassed, but Charlie only laughed and handed him her beer. He took a sip, and she rested her head on his arm.
"Thank you for this," she said.
"For what?"
"Bringing me someplace where I can leave my sisters alone for 5 minutes. It's a nice feeling."
"Are you going to leave?"
he abruptly asked.
Charlie gazed at him.
"What? Are you going to leave? Like soon? Or, you know, ever?"
"Ever? I can't tell you. Sometimes the McKilligans leave, and sometimes we are run off. But I wasn't planning on going anywhere soon."
"This thing with the Wera twins and your dad all gets resolved, say, tomorrow. You're out of here?"
"I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it. I kind of like it here, except for the weird demands for baked goods. But then again, the bears do give me ovens, so that seems fair."
"I don't want you to go,"
he admitted. "I'm not going anywhere, yet.
and this seems like a really intense conversation for two people who've known each other for a very short amount of time.
Did your wolf grandfather have a mate?
Yeah, I never had a chance to meet her.
Is he a good-looking guy? Tall? Handsome?
Charlie took out her phone, pulled up a picture of her and her grandfather at a packed Christmas get-together a few years back.
Berg looked and said, "Then the answer is, yes, he is. Your grandfather is the kind of guy who would have gotten a new woman eventually, except that he couldn't."
"He dated. I know he dated."
"He had sex. But I bet he never brought anybody home and said, 'This is your new grandma.'"
"No." She gave a small shake of her head. "He never did that."
"Because he'd found the one. And for shifters, that's all there is."
"Unless you're a McKilligan male, apparently."
"I can't speak for that bloodline. I can only tell you what I know about the rest of us."
"And you think I'm the one for you?"
"I don't know."
He was lying. He already knew.
"But I won't be sure if you leave suddenly."
"If I leave, it's because I need to protect my sisters."
"But they seem happy here."
"Except Stevie's career is in Switzerland right now."
"She doesn't seem to be in a hurry. Actually, she seems really comfortable right now. I mean, as comfortable as she can be when she's not screaming and running from bears."
Charlie chuckled. "She does seem comfortable. For her. But my sisters come first. I have to protect them. That's my job."
"I feel the same way about Britta and Dad, but..." "What? Nothing for you?"
"I honestly don't know." She rubbed her forehead. "But I'm not trying to, you know, get away from you either, which for me is a lot."
"All I ask is that you tell me if you need to go, for whatever reason, even if it's to get away from me."
She rolled her eyes. "You are the most amiable person I've ever met. Why would I need to get away from you?"
"That makes me sound boring."
Charlie jumped off the truck and faced Berg head on.
"Dude,"
she practically snarled, "you can shift into a 1,500-pound bear. How fucking boring can you be?"
Berg gave a little shrug. "Polars shift into 1,500 pounds. I only shift to 1,000.
Charlie threw up her hands. "Oh, well then." He was so frustrating. Cute, sweet, goddamn lovable. He could have any woman who didn't have a fear of heights. But he was worried about being too boring for her. God, she needed boring. If boring meant stable and loving and caring, if it meant taking care of those you loved, then yeah, the dude was boring. The kind of boring she'd always wanted in her life. From the moment Charlie had been conceived, everything about her life was a surprise. Even her. Never had anyone been with her just because they wanted to be. Things had worked out, even when she'd been dumped on some unsuspecting person's doorstep, like her grandfather. But it would have been great to know she'd always been wanted, always been needed, and not just because she could kill 20 people in a room without working up a sweat. And to her shock, she'd finally found that. In a bear who was a triplet. Could she stay around forever? She still didn't know. But while she was here... Charlie moved in and kissed Berg. Without warning, just grabbed him and kissed him. Because she wanted to, and she knew he wouldn't mind. And boy, did he not mind. His big arms wrapped around her and lifted her up so that she could wrap her legs around his waist and dig her fingers into his hair. That great, thick, sexy bear hair.
"Come home with me,"
he whispered when he pulled away. The party was still going on, and her sisters couldn't be more secure. So she kissed him again, and that seemed to be the only answer he needed. He carried her back to his house, the pair kissing the entire way. Her body was warm and pliable in his arms, but she was also demanding. They reached his front door and he carried her inside, closing the door in Benny's face, much to his annoyance. Damn dog. Berg wanted to get her upstairs, but he only got her as far as the wall beside the stairs. That's where he pinned her, still kissing her, but now with his hands moving all over her. She pulled his T-shirt off, forcing him to stop long enough so she could get it over his head. Charlie tossed it aside and then removed her own, her bra quickly following. Then she wrapped her arms around his shoulders, and he knew she'd wanted to feel him skin to skin. Her hands moved over his shoulders, down his arms, back up to his shoulders again. She dragged her short nails against the tight muscles in his neck. Berg growled, unable to help himself, praying she didn't get scared off. Then again, this was the woman who'd told Sissy Mae Smith, "I don't know you." The entire party had been talking about it, the bears laughing, mostly because the she-wolf had been so insulted. But that was not a woman who was going to be frightened off by some growling, or a little snarling, or fangs brushing against her shoulder. He was right, too. It didn't scare her off. It turned her on. Charlie's grip on him tightened, her breath growing harsher, her nipples hard against his chest. Berg unleashed his claws and shredded the shorts and panties from her body. She shuddered hard and kissed him deeper. He grabbed a condom he'd put in his back pocket in case an opportunity with Charlie presented itself that night. Thankfully, it had. Right now. Berg didn't believe in missing opportunities. He slipped the condom on and buried himself so deep inside Charlie McKilligan he felt part of her, until he knew he'd never find anyone who could replace her. Who could fill the Charlie-sized hole she'd built for herself inside his heart? Berg stopped moving, letting himself just feel her pulsating around him, warm and needy, loving and demanding, ballsy and ridiculous. No wonder she'd warned him away from her at the beginning. Not because of some curse, but because she was like a drug where one hit was too much and 1,000 hits were not enough. She was in his blood now, in his soul. Her concerns were his, her troubles his, her family his. Her sisters had problems that he'd feel responsible to help fix, the same as he did with his own siblings, because that's what happened when you found your mate. His father had warned him.
"Your mother may drive me nuts,"
he'd often complain,
"but I can't imagine my life without her."
Now he understood his father as he never had before. He pulled out of their kiss and looked down into her face, studied it, pushing her curly hair off her cheeks so he could see her clearly. "Are you okay?" she asked, stroking her hands down his chest. "Is Charlie." No matter what was going on, she was always thinking about others. It was her way. He didn't think she knew any other. He wanted to tell her he loved her, but it was too soon. The big shifter world was still kind of foreign to her, still an oddity. So he began to slowly fuck her, taking his time, stroking his cock inside her as he watched her face, enjoying the way she smiled when he thrust in. Berg wouldn't tell her he loved her. Not yet. But he would tell her the truth, so she understood.
"You mean everything to me, Charlie,"
he said, leaning in so his breath hit her ear.
"If you have to leave, tell me first. Just tell me."
She gasped, her entire body throbbing around him, her pussy beginning to squeeze him so hard he was sure he was seeing stars.
"Okay,"
she said around her gasps.
"Okay."
"Promise me."
I promise,"
she finally got out before burying her face against his shoulder, her fangs biting down on his flesh, the pain sending him over the edge. He came so hard he could barely remember his name. Charlie opened her eyes when she tasted blood in her mouth.
"Oh, my God!"
She wiped her hand against her lips.
"Berg, I'm so sorry."
He gazed at her, eyes slowly blinking.
"For what?"
"I bit you."
She examined the wound, wincing at the clear fang marks on his shoulder.
"I broke the skin."
"So?"
She lifted her head.
"We're not vampires, dude."
"No, but we're predators. Biting's expected."
He kissed her and, still inside her, kicked off his jeans and sneakers and carried her up the stairs.
"We can't leave our clothes and condom wrappers just lying around your house," she warned him. "I'm guessing Britta wouldn't be okay with that. I know I wouldn't be okay with that."
you grew up with sisters. Britta, sadly for her, grew up with two brothers. He carried her into his bedroom, and together they fell onto the mattress. Trust me, over the years my sister has dealt with much worse. But, he added, don't believe her if she calls you a whore when you leave tomorrow. Charlie frowned.
Wait, what?
Chapter 29 Max tied up the last of the trash bags and tossed it on the massive pile before heading into the house. Stevie and the 17-year-old, who had been too young to drink, but weirdly didn't complain about that, had made themselves scarce as soon as the party wound down, and Britta began forcing wolverines and she-wolves to start cleaning. Not surprising. Stevie hated cleaning in general. She always expected someone else to do it for her. The luxury life of the prodigy, Max supposed. Once in the kitchen, every last morsel of Charlie's baking had disappeared along with the bears, Max found Britta pouring herself a glass of water.
Hey, Max, my brother took Charlie back to our house. I'm almost positive they're having sex, which is not a problem for me. But if I find any evidence of that outside his bedroom, I'm going to lose my shit. So can I stay the night here so he has a chance to clean up the place before I get home?
Max loved Britta. She was a 6'7" nut, but she was a hilarious nut. Max enjoyed that in any woman.
Absolutely. There are extra bedrooms down the hall, and tons of fresh bedding that suddenly appeared in the closet yesterday.
Thanks. Dag already nabbed the couch. It's for black bears, though, she said, so he's all scrunched up on it. They both laughed at that until they heard it. Not Dag. He was snoring loudly in a cute, drunken stupor. This sound was soft, and they'd both noticed it. Britta lifted her nose, scented the air. She pointed up. Max reached under the table and grabbed 2 .45s, tossing one to Britta. Moving quickly but silently, they went up the stairs and down the hall, stopping outside Stevie's bedroom. Britta was about to kick the door in, but Max stopped her with a raised hand. She put her forefinger to her lips. Max eased the door open. While her baby sister slept soundly in the bed, blissfully unaware, probably zonked out on her nighttime meds, their father was busy going through a pile of notebooks that had arrived earlier that day from Switzerland. He was so intent on whatever he was doing, he didn't even know that his other daughter and a goddamn bear were watching him. Biting back a snarl, Max marched into Stevie's room, wrapped her hand around her father's mouth from behind, and pressed her gun against the side of his neck.
Not a sound. Not a word.
She started to drag him to the door, but Britta was suddenly there, grabbing Freddy's legs and lifting them off the floor. Together they carried him out into the hallway. That's where they met a shirtless Shen. He had his own .45 out, and he was ready for whatever. Max motioned at Stevie's door.
"Close it," she said low. "Then go back to bed. We've got this."
Britta never expected the McKilligan sisters' idiot father would dare come back to New York, much less his daughter's house in the middle of bear territory. But here they were. They carried the honey badger out into the yard and threw him into the garage wall. When he tried to get up, Britta rammed her foot against his shoulder, pinning him there. Max crouched next to Freddie McKilligan.
"What the fuck are you doing here?"
"Nothing. I just needed a place to—"
Max grabbed her father by the throat with one hand and squeezed. He began choking, slapping at her hand, trying to get her to release him. She did, just when he started to turn blue. While he coughed and took in big gulps of air, she asked again,
"What the fuck are you doing here?"
He gazed at his daughter with bloodshot eyes.
"Go to hell."
Calmly, Max let out a breath.
"I will have this she-bear break your windpipe for me, and then I'll hold your nose closed until you suffocate. And we all know that I am the crazy McKilligan to do it and not lose a moment of sleep. So are you really going to make me ask you again, or are you just going to tell me? Because we both know you're not brave."
Freddie looked up at Britta, and she balled up one fist, knowing her knuckles would crack. An irritating sound that drove her brothers crazy, but was so effective on others.
Swallowing, Freddy looked at his daughter and said, "Please, please don't hurt." The damn badger suddenly slipped out from under Britta's foot, and with a surprising amount of that hidden strength badgers were known for, he tossed his daughter at Britta. Britta caught Max, but when she put her down on the ground, one of the worst fathers Britta had ever known